Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. Every week, we dive deep with economic development professionals on leadership and other issues challenging our industry. Our goal is to equip listeners with the knowledge to grow their impact and influence. You are America's Jobs Team, and when you get stronger, communities thrive. All right, today's episode is really cool, and I know I always say that, but today I'm talking with another amazing North America's top 50 economic developer, Andrew Carty, and he is the Director of Economic Development at the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. Andrew has so many cool things to share about the ag business. He talks about international trade and migrant workership and the repercussions that they're still dealing with in the pandemic aftermath. Andrew also shares all of the interesting programs him and his team have implemented with a focus on growing that talent pipeline. And to be completely honest, I always wrongly think of agriculture as like farms and livestock. But Andrew changed my mind because he talks about all the robotics, the automation, the AI, and all of the advanced technology in that business sector. So let's listen in. And I really hope you learn as much as I did while I was talking with him. Hey, everyone. Welcome back. I am so excited you're tuning in for another episode of the America's Jobs Team podcast. I am Faye Davis, and I'm super excited because I'm here today with Andrew Carty, who works at the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. So, Andrew, I'm so excited to have you here. How are you?
Very well. So excited to be here. So excited to get to chat with you this morning. Looking forward to the conversation.
It's going to be a good one. I can feel it. So let's just dive right in. I would love to know, how did you wind up in economic development? Did you plan on becoming an economic developer when you went to college, or did you more or less fall into the profession?
Such a good question. And I bet if you ask any economic developer, you're going to get an interesting and storied answer to that question. And like a lot, if not most, my economic development colleagues, my journey to the profession wasn't a straight line. And that's okay. The perspectives, the skills that I picked up along the way, I think, are what make me most effective in my current role. So maybe starting in college, I was focused on environmental science in Arkansas. And after graduating, I started in a mayor's office and got really, really excited, engaged about policy and grassroots activity and advocating, really what goes into community and driving a community forward. That led me to coming up to Indiana University to get my Master of Public Affairs, where I focused on economic development. And through some other roles, I got really exposed to sustainability as a concept through strategic communications as a skill set. And I eventually wound up at a national economic and workforce consultancy here in Indianapolis. And that's where I was really able to learn an awful lot about the profession very, very quickly. And I would say my number one recommendation to any young people that might be looking to grow very, very quickly in a field is to work for a fast-paced consultancy. I'd say in 2 or 3 years in that role, I probably got 5 or 10 years worth of experience exploring best and promising practices, learning trends, learning community needs, and helping economic developers spanning local communities, regions, and state across the country solve their problems. And I'd say from then on, I've been hooked in this field.
I love that you said that because, and I love that what you said right at the beginning of your answer too, it is all of our different paths into this profession that make this industry so eclectic and so robust. And there are so many ways to do things the right way or the right way for your community. So I love hearing and I love that you said that about the economic development consultancy, that you got basically a crash course, decade worth of experience in 2 to 3 years. So that's awesome. I kind of want to dig a little bit deeper because you just talked about kind of the background that really led you to be an awesome fit for the role that you're in right now. And our listening audience, I would say, is largely in more the traditional realm of economic development, whatever that might mean to someone. So how does your role at the Indiana Department of Agriculture differ from that? How is it similar? What does a usual day or week look like for you? Like, talk us through that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'll probably have another theme here in that the short answer on the typical day or week is that no one day, no one week is remotely the same, especially in my role. And I would say when I'm thinking about economic development, both in plentiful times and in lean times, like we've been going through and are moving through right now, to me, economic development at the core foundation is focused on attracting, expanding, and retaining investment in our communities. And my team and my role, I believe, checks all those boxes, as well as we play some kind of unique functions for the state and the department in terms of managing international trade. When it comes to agriculture, which international trade and agriculture is a huge deal, as well as some maybe more non-traditional funding avenues, which I can speak to a little bit further around grants and other funding resources. So unlike other traditional economic development organizations, my role, I do not sit within our state economic development corporation. I sit as a standalone division in an agency, and we're the only agency like that outside of the state economic development corporation that has an economic development division. Obviously, I partner with them every day. They're the four above me. I'm up there. We work on deals together, share expertise. But because my team's not in that role, we don't receive tax revenues. And as such, we are not responsible for cutting state level incentives using tax revenues. So that's a little bit different. But on the flip side, I would say it also means, and we use this to our advantage in the role that we play, that our team is not tied to any kind of transactional or any type of contractual relationship with our communities and businesses. We can really be kind of a cradle to grave, trusted partner focused not necessarily on just the deal, but also on all the other components that a business might need to be successful. You know, who they need to talk to and engage with in the ecosystem, who they might need to source from if they're trying to make a specific product, or even, you know, if they're getting into the point where they may want to transition the business to a family member or to a trusted partner, how to facilitate those kind of engagements to make sure that that entity plays that role in our ecosystem. And so that mirrors a lot of what I would also consider traditional economic development, you know, focusing on advocacy, focusing on regulatory support if a company is running into hurdles, focusing on helping develop markets and market access for our target industries, and for just helping those businesses, like I mentioned, navigate whatever the community might be, that robust ecosystem of resources, support programs that they can leverage but may not know about to be successful. And like I mentioned a little earlier, kind of something unique about us is our relationship with the United States Department of Agriculture means that we're kind of the tip of the spear on deploying other large state, but also federal funding resources, like funding that comes through the USDA Market Access Program for international activities, or funding that comes through the USDA Agricultural Marketing Service for domestic growth and innovation to drive industry sales, to drive industry promotion activities, to help our businesses be successful and grow.
I love that. And thank you for giving such a detailed overview, because I think that's super interesting. Not all economic development is the same. And so this was really interesting for me to learn about. So I'm certain that our listening audience enjoyed it too. I want to go a little bit off script, because you said something about international trade and that's huge within the world that you are working. And my question is, how has that changed over the last year? Because, you know, international trade, and especially with the pandemic, how has that been affected?
It's been affected in a variety of ways, both large and small. I could use an example of our Indian hardwood industry to really capture that. Hardwoods industry in Indiana is our largest agricultural sector. If you took every other sector, think poultry, think pork, think beef, think corn, think soybeans, and combine them, they wouldn't equal the economic impact of our hardwood sector. And our hardwood sector, although it's changing to really focus more on domestic value-added processing opportunities for our resource, which my team is 100% behind, forever and for always, the hardwoods industry has been really focused on exporting logs. And that's required some really deep relationships with export partners. And if you think about a log and someone that might be buying a log from Asia, they literally want to come to Indiana, to the lot, to look at the log that they're buying before they buy that to ship back over to China. And one of the huge immediate impacts for that industry was travel. You know, it was very, very challenging when we're talking about trying to link up buyers to our agribusinesses that are looking to export. Very, very challenging to facilitate those relationships if someone can't be there in person. So we're having to pivot, and we were looking at, you know, are there some of these video conference platforms that are sophisticated enough where someone can be on the other side of a screen and get that same feeling? Is there a way where these companies overseas can identify and contract trusted partners that might not have been their previous buyers, but trusted partners already in the country that could kind of leverage those activities for them moving forward? And it kind of managed through. And we're seeing obviously a little bit of change there, but that's just one example of what an impact it's had on our industry in particular. And if you add in the factors of transportation, as we well know in the export market, you talk about the situation that happened in the Suez Canal. You talk about just recently a bridge issue that's happened down in Memphis on the Mississippi River that backed up barge traffic. All of those intangibles, those things that you don't expect, really have added on that layer where typically and traditionally, you know, you work around them, but in the middle of dealing with a pandemic where things are already stressed, those things are just exponentially more impactful and require immediate kind of navigations, us connecting with companies to figure out how to work around those issues and help them be successful. And yeah. My expectation for exporting and the kind of moving forward in the future too is it's going to be just like anything. When you have a downturn, I think companies are going to realize that there's this opportunity to diversify their revenue streams. And whether that's across products, across customers, or domestically, internationally, I think that there's going to be more and more interest and more need for folks like our audience and our profession to really play a role to facilitate navigating what is a complex activity.
Yeah. Well, and I think over the last year, certainly people all over, right? Any business sector have gotten really a crash course in pivoting on the spot, in crisis management, in changing models and figuring out better ways. So this is super interesting to me. So these are some repercussions of the pandemic. And there's more. And Indiana has still been very active in continuing to provide assistance to communities and businesses alike for recovery. And you alluded to it earlier, but you have played a pretty significant part in creating a brand new grant program for a local industry. So can you tell us a little bit more about that that experience, what industry it is?
Oh, absolutely. And many of my colleagues across the country delved into this particular situation that I'll kind of walk us through. And so Indiana was not alone. And it was really a testament for all of us sharing our thoughts and expertise as we navigated this and developed these programs. But to your point, in 2020, the Indiana State Department of Agriculture was awarded $4 million in our federal CARES Act coronavirus relief funding that we received as a state to put towards a new program, the Indiana Meat Processing Expansion and Development Grant Program. And that's a mouthful, but it's important to note that it was our agency's first ever business grant or direct funding for expansion projects, first ever, which we were really excited about. You know, when the COVID-19 pandemic began to impact America, grocery counters were exhausted, you know, shelves were empty, restrictions were placed on how much a consumer could buy. The supply chain was disrupted by some closures of major packing plants, both in Indiana and across the country, and local packers and processors who were the target for this program, and small or very small, so think 500 employees or less, were not immune to this situation. You know, they found themselves overwhelmed with customers that were lining out the door for retail. They were backed up sometimes out 2 years in processing appointments. The industry had really never gotten a lot of public direct support. They kind of operated under the radar, but they stepped up to their credit to communicate that this is a big need and an opportunity for the state of Indiana to build a more resilient supply chain in this space. And they committed to partnering with us to pull this program off in very short order to keep food on Hoosier tables. It is a brand new program, and it was one that had to be designed, deployed, and then executed by the grantees in 3 months, which I've never run a grant program like that. It was an extremely heavy lift. When asked by our leadership if we had the capacity to get this done, our answer was no, but we're going to make it happen because we think it's that important. And so our team was on the phone with meatpackers and processors every single day for 3 months, even 4 months after the program closed, sometimes talking to folks, two or three calls every single hour. We troubleshooted contracting issues, backward equipment. We educated companies, the vast majority of whom had never had a grant before, on how to manage that process. It was long hours, all hands on deck, the whole holiday season. But if I had to pick one program in my entire career that I'm most proud of, it would be this one. And in total, we spurred close to a $10 million investment in the industry. So our state investment plus about a $6 million match by these companies. There were 40 companies that we targeted. They were able to keep their 962 tax-paying employees on the job while creating safer and more efficient work environments, keeping beef, pork, and related products available for their clientele, expanding their customer base to new buyers who had never set foot in one of these butcher shops, but who are not leaving. And this program also created 135 full-time positions, 72 part-time positions, and 30 contract positions, and led to increasing operation efficiency, sometimes 60 to 100% in these entities. So it was very, very impactful for Indiana.
That's amazing. Those are some like wicked impressive numbers. I love it. And you just keep segueing so perfectly to my next question. You were just talking about adding jobs and keeping people employed. But I feel like we can't have any conversations these days without talking about the workforce hurdle. Is the agriculture industry experiencing the same? And how are you and your team strategizing to grow the talent pipeline?
Well, as someone who has worked with a lot of local communities and in a lot of local communities, there are some hot topic issues. And I would say, like parking as a topic for any local community, I think workforce will always be a hot topic in economic development and a challenge. And I think that's especially true for sectors like agriculture, where you enter not just domestic workforce needs, but also needs for migrant workforce through programs like H-2A and H-2B, which was hugely impacted by the pandemic. So really what my team is doing is we're focusing very hard on telling our Indiana agriculture story. We want to get people excited about potential careers in agriculture and help facilitate those transitions. I think many people that I speak with still imagine what you might see or expect from an old postcard. You know, a red barn's out in the field. There's a farmer out there that's running a plow dragged by a horse. And modern farms and agribusinesses are absolutely nothing like that. They have and are changing to become more efficient as technologies, marketing needs, economic factors all change to drive what means profitability for those businesses. You know, there's shifts to controlled environment agriculture, for aquaponics, for leafy greens. There's this big push for e-commerce, for more retail, regenerative, sustainable practices for crops, robotic milkers on a dairy. And all those things, I think, are the future of food and need a unique workforce. And our team, what we're really tactically doing is trying to make those linkages through partnerships like, for example, our new Field Atlas job board deployed with Agrinovis Indiana, focused on high school graduates. And linking them to our agribusinesses in the state. We're deploying 3 new augmented reality platform applications on Apple and Android that were developed and deployed with the Indiana State Fair. And they're focused on middle school education around ag careers in forestry, dairy, row cropping, and there's a little experience the students can kind of activate and learn some questions about the industry and get excited, as well as some partnerships we've developed with our Indiana FFA and our 4-H organizations and through tactical workforce trainings for existing industry with our land grant university, Purdue, and our Department of Workforce Development.
Wow. You guys have clearly been thinking about this. So that's awesome. That's really, really awesome to hear. Andrew, we are nearing the end of our time together. So I'm going to end on this one last question. And that's, what excites you about economic development? What is it about this industry that keeps you energized and keeps you in it and keeps you coming back for more?
Well, I appreciate you bearing with me. I like to talk. I think it's coming from being raised in the South, but
you're in good company. I like to talk too. So
it's a great question. And I think what excites me the most about this field is that there's ever-changing subject matter. You know, you have to keep pace with business, and that economic developers play such a strong leadership role in their communities. And then the fact that some of these emerging focus areas we're seeing in the industry are just really on point for what's near to me and dear to me, and I think have a really long and productive roadmap ahead of them. I think the profession in general is more important now than it ever has been before. Like I mentioned, the work of economic developers is always evolving. You know, we are reacting to the unique needs of our communities and at the pace of business. Something that fits one region or local community may not work in another. And our connections and the fact that we're such a tight-knit group of professionals really allows us to share best practices. It allows us to bring new ideas back to our communities and help them succeed. And then as we come out of this current crisis, economic developers at every level are going to be the natural leaders and have been the natural leaders in helping our communities recover. You know, that's because we know our local businesses, we understand their workforce needs, to your point, and we're the experts in attracting and retaining tax base and making sure that we don't lose a lot of that effort that's been built up over the past few years. And then lastly, on top of the COVID recovery piece, I think the last few years have shown a lot more focus in the field on supporting entrepreneurship and encouraging the creation and growth of homegrown businesses, retaining businesses, all of which kind of get me out of bed in the morning. That kind of activity excites me. It opens doors for economic developers to partner with local programs like SBDCs or PTACs or SCORE chapters to really engage with entrepreneurs and small businesses and move the needle, especially with the job engines that are our U.S. small businesses here in America.
I love that. And, you know, it is really all about moving the needle for whether, you know, you are working at a state organization, so, or a state department. For you, it's moving the needle for all of Indiana. But that's what it's all about for all of us, is setting those goals and impacting people and moving the needle forward and growing and thriving. So, Andrew, I really can't thank you enough for being with me today, for taking the time to be interviewed and let me pelt some not easy questions at you. And congratulations on being one of North America's top 50 economic developers. You are energetic and excited about the work that you do. And I'm so glad that you are in our industry.
Well, Faye, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me this morning. It was a pleasure. Would love to chat anytime, whether it's online or offline. Anything that we can ever do to help and collaborate in our industry across the country is really exciting to us. And I think this is how we're all successful as we move forward.
I can't wait to learn more from you. So thank you. Thanks for sticking with us to the very end. And again, a huge thank you to our sponsors, Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. The America's Jobs Team podcast releases episodes every week that are specifically curated for economic developers like you looking to stay in the know about industry trends, leadership development, career management, growing high-performing organizations, and so much more. So don't forget to subscribe. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Podcasts, or really any other preferred podcast outlet that you use. America's Jobs Team is audio engineered by Joshua Wieters and produced by Faye Davis.